Today, over 100 people searching in Latimer County using planes, helicopters, search dogs, and volunteers on horseback to try to find any signs of Bobby Jamison, his wife Sherilyn, and their daughter Madison. The Jamisons were trying to buy land near Panola Mountain where their truck was found, but no signs of the family. And now as time ticks, hope is running out.
At this time, we're expecting all avenues. I mean, we're searching each way or form that might have happened here.
The sheriff said it's almost as if the family disappeared.
Hey everybody, welcome back to episode 10 of Cold Case Murder Mysteries. I'm your host Ryan Krause, out on work release once again to bring you the madness, mayhem, and macabre of this crazy mixed up world. This time in the form of the Jamison family from Eufaula, Oklahoma, who disappeared in October 2009 while supposedly scouting property for a new home in the Sansboy Mountains 30 miles away near Red Oak, and were never seen again. Until their skeletons were found by a hunter in the woods nearby in 2013. Huddled together and face down. But was it an accident? Just a simple case of three family members walking off into unfamiliar terrain and ultimately succumbing to the elements when they lost their way? Or was there something more sinister going on? Simply put, was this murder? An unfortunate incident of wrong place, wrong time? Maybe a drug deal gone wrong? And even then, beyond those considerations, many people feel there may have been a satanic element to their deaths. Specifically, paranormal activity. You know, like ghosts. Which is absolutely ridiculous, to the point of being laughable. But it's also true. And I'm going to show you how, by way of something I call the simplicity of toxicity. Or more specifically, how murder-suicide is enacted through the symbiotic rationalization of the desires of two disillusioned brains increasingly acting as one, and why the resulting effect, the staunch belief of self-imposed transcendence to the heavens, is construed as reality, one which initially bore significant symbolic relevance years earlier on a very special day, specifically when the Jamison's daughter Madison was born. More on that in a minute. But first, the facts. On October 8, 2009, 44-year-old Bobby Jamison and his 40-year-old wife Sherilyn drive off to the mountains near Red Oak with their 6-year-old daughter Madison in tow, as well as the little girl's dog Maisie. Reportedly, they were interested in purchasing a 40-acre plot of land near the top of a mountain, despite the fact family and friends were never informed of this. It could be that they were hiding the info in order to not offend loved ones by potentially moving so far away. Or the truth could be that they had no actual plans to move and were really motivated by something else altogether. Perhaps something dangerous. In my opinion, Bobby's suggestion of looking at property on the day of their disappearance is a lie based in the truth, as deception often tends to be most easily and successfully transferred in that manner. Basically, the less bullshit you sling, the more likely it is people won't smell it when the winds of deceit start blowing their way. So before proceeding, I think we need to account for motivation. 1. The Jamisons claim to want to make a geographical move, to the top of a mountain. Humans tend to migrate only in situations where the destination is perceived as a better option than the place from which they embarked. And why do we flee valleys for high ground? Because of threats. And what is the greatest force of nature to ravage lowlands? Flooding. And while flooding causes all sorts of damage that can be described in numerous ways, it is singular in its effect on the human body, specifically as it pertains to death. So what do we call it when our attempt to get out of a valley to higher ground fails, from a psychological standpoint, as well as in the physical world? We call that drowning. The Jamisons were going under, sinking quickly without recourse, and failed in their emotional plight to reach higher ground, so they embraced the possibility of physically reaching that point in order to finally make things right. That's when the truth of their intentions hit them in the face, and I'll show you how it happened. As we know they no longer want to be in a certain place, their home, we also know that they don't want anybody else to know about the idea of moving beforehand. Therefore, we understand that they perceive that wherever the actual location of their new home might be, will be wholly unacceptable to family. Why? Does 30 miles in a place with very little traffic sound like a distance that couldn't be reconciled with the necessity to see family? No. But if you were never planning to come back from the trip, it makes plenty of sense. 3. Because of the aforementioned items in 1 and 2, we already know they want to die. In fact, it was already apparent much earlier. You know, like 6 years prior, at least, when Madison was born. The result of the combined brain chemistry of Bobby and Sherilyn produced Madison's full name, and it reveals the nature and location of their death are already being implemented. Her middle name, of course, is Stormy Star, which is exactly the atmosphere the Jameson family experienced when they tried to run to high ground and learned there was no help for what ailed them, i.e. the storm, except death, transcending to heaven by way of the stars. Where the clouds meet the stars is the junction of where humanity meets divinity. This disappointment is the culmination of their act too, the point where they realize their ignorance and throw their arms to the sky with demands for God to answer them by taking them from this pain. But what is this pain? What's chasing them? Let's take a look at the clues they leave behind with the truck, and then backtrack to their behavior leading up to the event, at least according to family and friends. Now, according to a man living down the road from where the Jamesons' truck was found abandoned in this isolated area, the family had stopped to ask him for directions, and specifically stated that they were up there to look at property for consideration of purchase. There are generally two immediate reactions to this info. The first is the notion that they might have been lying about their purpose in order to get the info they needed without raising suspicion, and the second is that they had consistent financial problems that likely would have prevented this motivation of buying property from being a reality. But somehow they had $32,000. Basically, they're lying, one way or another. So what we need to ask first is why. And here's where it's important to think outside the box, because we're predisposed to wondering why the Jamesons are lying about their intentions. Think of it this way. If Bobby stops the truck and tells a man that the family is looking for property, but it's a convoluted lie involving adult activity they're trying to conceal, such as drug dealing, that lie is also going to be extended to anyone else who's involved in the situation and isn't supposed to know the truth, and done so within the appropriate context. In this case, that other person is Madison. How do we know this is true? Well, if we know the Jamesons are lying about either drug dealing or a potential murder-suicide, those are both subjects for which Madison will not be granted access, for obvious reasons. So the lie about seeking property was initiated to satisfy Madison, rather than the local landowner they asked for directions. That was simply an extension of the dishonesty that fits within acceptable parameters. But why wouldn't the Jamesons just tell Madison they were going hiking for the day? The answer is because they needed a way to tell her that they'd be permanently going to a new home, and they wanted her to share their enthusiasm for that potential, rather than be scared. But back to the 32K. Why would we believe the Jamesons were involved in drug dealing? Because people with financial issues generally don't keep an envelope containing $32,000 under the front seat of the truck. Unless they really are buying property, right? Or do you buy property with cash? And this is where I'm going to ask you to concede something, which is this. We will absolutely never know the truth about the money in that envelope because of the lack of detail involved in reporting it. I need to know the condition and type of envelope and to see the exact spot where it was found and at that time. But this is obviously an impossibility. Due to these circumstances, it remains a mystery. What we can do, however, is speculate that the money might have been for the purchase of drugs, specifically meth, or possibly even property, even though bringing cash to a real estate transaction isn't exactly the equivalent of buying a 1996 Honda Civic from your neighbor. Nonetheless, these things are possible, yet we should note that no meth or accompanying paraphernalia were found in the Jamison home in the aftermath, nor was there evidence of drug transactions. Of course, they could have cleaned up after themselves. It's hard to say. And here's the biggest problem with the money. There's an overwhelmingly popular sentiment, or perhaps assumption, that the $32K in cash was undoubtedly placed in the vehicle on the day of their disappearance by one of the Jamesons, and subsequently without question that it was also related to their intentions on that specific day. I argue this is incorrect, as the placement of the money under the seat and nature of their circumstances, specifically the inclination to flee that which was chasing them, dictates that it was part of an ongoing existing plan that never came to fruition. In much the same way your weird neighbor builds a bomb shelter and waits for the impending devastation of an atomic weapon that Russia is never going to deploy in a war that's truly only happening in his head. So, if we can't rely on the money to reveal why they abandoned the truck, what's left? The dog. The family left the dog in the truck, with the door shut. The money is still in the truck, along with the rest of their personal belongings, wallets, phones, GPS, etc. So it would be then more appropriate to say, especially in light of the fact they don't return, that they abandoned the truck, which means they did so intentionally, or were forced. So that brings us to our next important question. Were they accosted? There's no physical evidence to suggest this happened. No blood, drag marks, reports of shouting, or even gunfire. And the fact that the envelope full of money is still under the seat when it's over precludes any number of criminal motives. Very much, of course, a drug deal gone wrong. If you committed this crime and had so much as an inkling these people were involved with drugs, you would find their money and take it. In addition, the bodies are ultimately found face down, rather than buried, and it's 3 miles from the truck. What purpose is there for marching a family, including a 3-year-old, several miles from the site where you found them in order to execute them? It sounds like a lot of work and stress for barely trying to disguise murder. And in fact, if they were already dead when they were moved, that's even more work. So our other option is that the family simply walked away from the truck. And for all intents and purposes, there really isn't any reason to believe they didn't. Except, that's right, you guessed it, the money, and the dog, and the truck itself, and all of the other things that might be invaluable to human life as it exists on Earth. Armed with that knowledge, the totality of information suggests the Jamesons walked away from the truck voluntarily, and in doing so left behind that which they deemed no longer useful on the journey to their new destination. So let's do a cursory examination of these items. If you wanted to walk a family into the woods to kill them, a great way to get caught would be to leave their dog behind at the truck, where it's likely going to bark, whine, scratch at the windows, and like the truck, ultimately get noticed by somebody. However, it's also well known that dogs have a far different relationship with the paranormal than humans do, specifically that their sensitivities allow them to perceive these entities as beings in the same way that they might interpret a human's existence. Accordingly, dogs are often seen as being able to protect humans from these elements, at least in terms of warning them about approaching danger. So if you leave a dog behind to due to the onslaught of evil spirits chasing you, what it means is that you fear the spirits, or ghosts, or what's keeping you from getting to the place where you'll finally be safe. So in leaving the dog behind, the Jamesons indicate very clearly that the protection they need is a clear path from the truck to the place they're going, which, by default of what we discussed, means they will no longer need the dog or any material items whatsoever because they've left all those things behind in favor of relieving themselves of the pain in their forthcoming new environment. So, if you, as a human, trek to a place where you leave behind anything tangible that might be of value to your existence, it is a direct statement that you plan to no longer exist, at least in terms of a human context. Yet, there was one tangible item missing from the vehicle. And if you've been paying attention to the nature of the evidence, as it pertains to my theory, then you probably already know it's a gun. That's right. Sherilyn's .22 caliber handgun was missing from the truck. So the first thing people want to conclude is that she lured her husband Bobby and daughter Madison out to the sticks under the guise of checking out this property, then snuffed them out before doing herself in with the same weapon as part of a surprise murder-suicide. Now, there's no evidence to support anything like this happening, except the hole found in the back of Bobby's skull, where the remains were recovered. However, due to 4 years passing in between, it's difficult to say if the injury was sustained by a gunshot, or was even an injury at all in the sense that it happened after death due to environmental corrosion or animal interference. What we know for sure, though, is that the weapon wasn't recovered. That basically means you can believe one of two things. It's lost somewhere in the woods, buried under leaves, brush, or similar, or an outside party took it. Yet ask yourself this. If you committed a murder with a gun owned by the victims, why would you take it? The simple answer, which is the honest answer, is that you wouldn't. So, if nobody else took the gun, and it's missing at the same time the family members are, it's reasonable to conclude that the missing gun is correlated to actions taken by the missing people. And what actions can you take with a gun? 1. You can shoot somebody or something with it, including yourself. 2. You can hit somebody with it. 3. You can control somebody's actions with it. There really isn't another practical use for a handgun, though it could be used to start a fire, start a race, or even call attention to yourself under certain circumstances. But for the most part, those three reasons are the primary uses for a handgun. So if the Jamesons disappeared, their handgun disappeared simultaneously, and next time they're seen, they're dead, it would be reasonable to suggest that the Jamesons went into the woods with a handgun, intending to never come out alive. But why there? Why not just pull the trigger one morning at breakfast and end it? Because, like we said earlier, something really was chasing these people. Ghosts. And by some accounts, Satan himself. So, we're going to talk about how they came to be, and where you would go if this happened to you. We're going to discuss the simplicity of toxicity, or more accurately, the Bonnie and Clyde effect, otherwise infamously known as finding a partner in crime, much like we do in our romantic affairs. You see, your brain is designing an endgame right now. It's playing the old arcade version of Pac-Man, running wildly from the dangers that constantly try to consume human life. But in much the same way a chess match concludes, our mortality predisposes it to resignation of the fact death is ultimately inescapable, leaving it with the dilemma of simultaneously trying to live and die. Therefore, living is not the key aspect of brain functionality, nor is dying. Rather, what's integral to the process is preparation. In the same manner you might say what's most important to your everyday life is not birth or death, but the journey between. Now, what is it that distinguishes your birth and death from the journey of your everyday life? There is only one thing, and it's that which makes you human. Actions. Only the living make choices. Only the living take actions. Therefore, only the living prepare. So what we truly need to identify in the Jamesons' actions leading up to this mysterious event is, very simply, the essence of preparation. So let's backtrack through the events that preceded the disappearance and search for elements of preparation, especially those that could be deemed symbolic in a manner we can correlate to the family's later actions. The first red flag that pops up for me here is Sherilyn and Bobby approaching the pastor at their church on separate occasions preceding their disappearance. In these discussions, Sherilyn claims their home is rife with evil spirits, while Bobby asks the man if there are special bullets he can buy to kill them. So right here we can establish that the lines between reality and the spiritual world have blurred. And right smack in the middle of this mess is mention of crossing the threshold of both worlds to destroy the enemy, specifically with a gun. While this sounds crazy, what it reasonably allows us to establish is that Bobby felt his problems, whether human or otherworldly, could be solved by firing a gun. And what will always be true is that those who believe something is chasing them are entirely correct, regardless of the stability of their mental condition or the availability of physical evidence. Now, you might think we've made our point regarding preparation, that there is some relevance, and it's time to look for other clues as well. But wait a minute. Hold up here. What is it we're missing? We're missing the overarching theme of this interaction. Here we have two men, both mortal, but one acting in a ceremonial position as a representative of God's teachings in the flesh right here on earth. Basically, he's a conduit to the heavens, that threshold I mentioned the family trying to cross between the material and spiritual worlds. And in that light, let's examine the nature of what was said. Bobby believes special bullets can save his family from the paranormal threats. But this notion is dispelled by the other man, who simply tells him no such thing exists. Obviously, when we add 2 plus 2 here, what we get is a result that Bobby now understands he can't kill these evil spirits with a gun. But his desire to do so is stronger than ever. Yet this is a problem that can't be solved. You cannot kill that which cannot be killed. So your means of providing yourself and your family protection from the entity are limited to that which is practical by way of physics, better known as the laws of nature. Now, we can't alter physics, but we can alter the perception of how the principles of physics operate. For instance, if you're seeking to protect your family from evil spirits by utilizing the firing of bullets from a handgun, and it's impossible by way of actually killing the ghosts, one simply needs to turn the gun around and pull the trigger on the family to have the same effect, even if by entirely different means. In either case, the goal is achieved, yet the distinction is simply this. The ghosts are always something else until you die, become them, and realize they were always you. It is the cyclical nature of this psychology that reveals itself for what it is, a way out. And this isn't just how we handle our mortality. We apply this to every problem in life, especially with those we love. And what is the most attractive general trait a potential mate can have, outside of a great physical appearance? Brain chemistry. Simply put, symbiosis is key. So, if we think about the neurological synergy of these ideals for a minute, symbiosis and preparation combined, what do we get? We get the haunting surveillance video of Bobby and Sherilyn loading their truck before leaving for the trip to the mountains. In it, they pass each other repeatedly, perhaps up to 20 times, without so much as saying a word while they complete the task together in what some describe as a trance-like state, leaving many suggesting they're on drugs. Maybe they are. Maybe they're not. But what's important to ask about their movements in the video is this. What is the result of the neurological synergy between symbiosis and preparation as it pertains specifically to body language? Confidence. And what is it that makes confidence, as it pertains, again, specifically to body language, believable? Silence, accompanied by motion. And what is it about the thought of our lives ending that scares us most? The permanent loss of motion and the persistence of silence. Now, look at the video again, and what do we see? What is the only thing we see? Death approaching. And how do we know this? While most people are wondering why they're no longer talking to each other in the video, and how weird it seems, I contend that it's perfectly normal because it isn't necessary for them to communicate verbally at this point. The only reason humans communicate, to begin with, is to be understood. So when you and another human have not only come to an agreement that you should die, but decided the manner in which it should happen, you have essentially precluded any reason for continuing the necessity for understanding between you. Basically, you've become one being, from a cerebral standpoint, which is something we aim to achieve through normal life circumstances, but can only achieve in death. So what you're seeing in the video of these two people packing the car is not a trance, but the effects of resignation, the true beginning of them embarking on a journey to become one. And as we know, humans fruitlessly seek this in everyday life through marriage, to the tune of endless disappointment and loneliness, we understand that, in the context of impending death, The silence left behind in the Jamesons' wake in this video is this. Peace. Death is the sacrifice we make for eternal peace. And there is no struggle in peace. There is no suffering. Accordingly, there is no voice. There is only silence. And a little girl who met that fate at her parents' hands far too soon. You see, Madison, being a child, was perceived by Bobby and Sherilyn as ignorant in much the same way as the dog, unable to experience the ghosts and spirits in the manner as her parents, and therefore would not understand that she needed to be protected from them. So it would be a secret right up until the end, right up until the moment she ignorantly achieved her own peace by crossing the threshold into the afterlife, because the evil spirits were going to get her too. If she stayed here, she would eventually succumb, just like her parents did. And what makes that so sad, almost unbearable, is the fact that it's not only batshit crazy and totally unreasonable, but simultaneously also true. And then there's this. The distance the bodies were found from the truck causes many to believe that the incident was foul play, as having Madison hike 3 miles through the woods at 3 years of age would seem a bit much for her ability at that time. Yet consider that this is a death march, and that her parents would have comforted her anxieties with pleasant thoughts, perhaps even in a context where the words were still true, just not in this world. You know, like telling Madison they were moving to a new home at the top of a mountain where she'd be happy. Yet, we still haven't answered why they hiked 3 miles away. And I propose the answer is in the result, which is simply that they wanted to vanish without a trace. Because within those 4 years before they were found, we learned, in the absence of factual answers, the one lesson the Jamesons were trying to teach all along. That ghosts and evil spirits were chasing the family, ones that nobody else could ever see or feel, and ultimately that was what killed them. And we know this is true because once we came to understand it, the bodies were found. Yet, with their discovery, we learn what we had always known and wished the Jamesons could see clearly. The only thing that's chasing you is death. And the irony of running from it is that the only place to go is toward it. That cyclical, transcendent nature of this is haunting and persistent. Like silence. Like eternity. Like our universe, and everything in it, but not peace. Peace is not the province of the living. It is only known in death. And so the Jamesons were correct about this, if nothing else. There is something beyond this life, and you are predisposed to feeling it emotionally simply because it exists somewhere physically. Just as you can correlate every other feeling in your body to the reality of being alive. And that's what's so special about achieving it. We are equipped for something we have not yet experienced, in much the same way we're born with sex organs, and evolution tells us that this means there is a direct correlation to our purpose for existence. And if our purpose on this earth is simply to give love, then I can think of nothing more reasonable than believing the afterlife will be all about experiencing the peace that results from such actions. And in this context, what then becomes apparent? Silence is no longer haunting. The universe is no longer empty. And those evil spirits, they're no longer chasing you. And this is when we realize the only thing we have ever feared is letting go. That's why we can't understand the mystery of the Jamison family's disappearance, simply because they let go of fear and never looked back. It's as horribly tragic as it is beautiful, and isn't it funny how that perfectly describes life? But have we covered every angle here? Not quite. Apparently, Bobby and his father had a bitter dispute regarding a gas station owned by the senior of the two. Bobby had once worked there with a concession that when the older man passed on, he would leave the business to his son. However, a dispute rose about back pay that Bobby felt he was owed, and the father felt his son had become ungrateful. Ultimately, this led to a major rift between the two, and some claim Bobby's father had threatened him and his family on more than one occasion, specifically threatening to kill them. At this time, though, police investigations have not uncovered anything to link the man to their deaths, nor does there seem to be any circumstantial reason to believe he was involved. Furthermore, it's speculated that he wouldn't have been physically capable of committing the crime and would have to be involved in some sort of conspiracy. But exactly what type of conspiracy? Well, according to Sherilyn's mother, Connie Cocotan, the family was killed by members of a violent cult. And if you correlate this notion with the obvious denial she's experiencing about her daughter, you realize she's 100% correct. They were killed by members of a violent cult. In fact, here's the definition. A relatively small group of people having religious beliefs or practices regarded by others as strange or sinister. Now let that sink in for a moment as we consider these facts, as they relate. 1. The Jameson family was a small group of people. 2. The family believed they were fighting evil spirits in their home. 3. They owned a gun and considered violence as a legitimate method of solving their problems with ghosts, then specifically tried to acquire special bullets to kill them, and finally literally used their pastor as a divine rendition of Google in order to try to learn how to complete the task. So, what we can see in the aftermath, considering Sherilyn's mother's comments, is that when you extract her denial, the truth is staring back at you. Furthermore, let's take a look at how she extends the denial. She claims the family was not involved in witchcraft or drugs. Let's consider the facts. 1. A satanic Bible was found in the Jamesons' home after their disappearance. 2. Both parents were emaciated, paranoid, and complaining of being chased from their home by things they couldn't reconcile with the material world. 3. A family with financial problems possessed an envelope with $32,000 cash. What all of this says is that we can't truly identify any concrete evidence that they were involved in drug trafficking, or even just the consumption of drugs as users, particularly meth. But what it does say is that either of these things, or perhaps more appropriately, both of them, are very good possibilities. This leads me to believe that one of these two things is what served as fuel for the fire. Given the totality of evidence discussed, murder by an outside party seems unlikely. The Jamesons' phones were left in the vehicle, and there's nothing in the call logs to suggest they'd been habitually meeting anyone to do major drug deals. And the fact that they had $32,000 in their possession dictates that drug use, rather than trafficking, had a far more deleterious effect on their lives leading up to the disappearance. Again, both parents were very thin, described as emaciated, and becoming even more so as the big day arrived. They were also paranoid, another side effect of meth use. So, is it possible they simply made a trek into the isolated wilderness looking for drugs, either for sale or consumption, and wound up running into someone, or a party of people, who weren't too keen on them coming around? I find that hard to believe, that a chance encounter where they saw something like the location of a secret meth operation led to their murder, especially in the company of a small child. Now, it is reported that Bobby's father may have had ties to the Mexican mafia and enough money to call in a hit, and the location of where the truck is abandoned along an isolated road does seem to indicate it may have been stopped by somebody, or a group, that stepped in front of it. One would have to believe, however, that the father would need previous knowledge of this incident, yet he was estranged from the family, in addition to the fact that the other family members had no idea the Jamesons were going into the mountains that day either. So how would he know their intentions and be able to plan ahead? He wouldn't. And that's that. But there is another possibility. Do you remember Sherilyn's .22 caliber handgun that was missing from the truck when it was found? She once pointed that at a man. In fact, she threatened him after he made racially insensitive remarks regarding her partially Native American heritage. And it just so happens that this man used to live with the Jamesons. In fact, they rented him a room right up until the day Sherilyn forced him off the property. So maybe it's possible this guy had something to do with... Nope. His alibi held up under scrutiny by police. But wait. Sherilyn's mother claims she received a call from a woman who said her daughter was on the hit list of a cult called the United White Knights, which I'm guessing is not an inner-city diversity initiative aimed at improving life for all. More likely, it's a bunch of crazy rural Caucasian people desperately holding on to corrupt and indecent ideals that have fallen by the wayside in recent decades. And that's not all. From here, the talk about all of the cults and evil people up in those mountains continues, and even more stories bubble to the surface about who or what might be lurking in the shadows. But there's no evidence. At all. There is only mystery. And silence. And what do you get when you combine those two elements? The result is that they replicate the precise physical and emotional atmosphere of the consideration of one's own mortality. And that's why these people can't shut up when they really have nothing to say. So they're fabricating things, because they're being chased too. Just like you. And just like me. But who? Or what? Is chasing us right now. Ghosts, specifically the ghosts of the Jameson family. Accordingly, where are we trying to run? To the place where we can find a solution to our problem. We want answers. We want closure. And more importantly, we want peace. We want everything the Jameson family wanted, but found only in death. And it's here we realize the truth about what I've been saying all along. I'm going to repeat these words from earlier in the show. The ghosts are always something else until you die, become them, and realize they were always you. It is the cyclical nature of this psychology that reveals itself for what it is, a way out. And this isn't just how we handle our own mortality. We apply this to every problem in life. Especially with those we love, always with those we miss, and eternally for the fact that we'll never see anyone again when we're gone. This endeavor is not undertaken to expose the mystery of what happened to the Jameson family. Rather, it's a byproduct of sadness, molded from the most profound, complex human tragedy a person can experience in any context. Loss. Because in the end, we truly do lose it all. We leave our wallet, cell phone, GPS, keys, dog, and $32,000 in our truck because we can't take it with us where we're going. And what makes it even further heartbreaking is that the truth beneath this mystery, at least from the standpoint of our motivations, is that we're hoping, somewhere deep down in our hearts, did the Jameson family, wherever their fate may have taken them, went there together. And the reason we want to know if they're together is because, if they are, then we already know that love exists in this place. And in that light, we no longer have to be afraid of what comes next. We no longer need to run, or even hide. We need only to close our eyes and fade to sleep.